You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden T20 World Cup Daily Podcast. I'm Yaz Rana, and to talk through Australia's win over Ireland and figuring out what that means for England is the managing editor of Wisden.com, Ben Gardner, and ESPN Quick Info's Matt Roller. Ben, before we started recording, we were talking about how you're probably one of just a handful of cricket journalists, maybe the only one to watch every single ball of Ireland's campaign so far, including all the cricket in round one. The final margin of victory... Initially, it looked like it wouldn't have done justice to the jeopardy that was probably felt 60% through that Ireland innings. And even though in the end it wasn't massive, Australia were 92 for 3 after 13 overs, only going at sevens. 150 didn't look off the cards.
Yeah, it was a funny sort of game because, as you say, like, it's quite a convincing margin of victory. It looked like it was going to be even more convincing at one point. And yet Ireland will sort of be kicking themselves that they let it get away from them, I think. I think Finch played... I wouldn't at all say that this is Aaron Finch being back. I don't think he still looked especially like he was timing it sweetly like he sort of can. It was sort of a very canny knock from a very experienced player who knew there would be guys he could target. And after that, well, yeah, after that 30, no, I think the next three went for like 53 runs or something. And that kind of decided the game, as did... the opening burst. And obviously Stark can do that to anyone, swinging the new ball, attacking the stumps like that. But to give two wickets to Glenn Maxwell in that fashion, that will really, really hurt them. And then even after that, you had Lorcan Tucker play absolutely brilliantly. And going to the last three overs, they needed, 44? And you think then, if he manages to farm the strike well, and actually it almost felt like Arne didn't realise quite how close they were at that point. Like, it was almost a bit like they were going through the motions. There was a single, so they just took it. When actually... if you're Tucker and you're basically seeing like a football, you're blasting everyone to like everywhere. If you face the strike, you'll back yourself to hit, you know, a couple of sixes in every five balls and then maybe get a single. And actually you'll be getting pretty close with that. An odd game that looks like a thrashing and that I guess people won't be talking about too much come the end of the tournament, but that was interesting in its own way, I suppose.
Matt, one of the players who really stood out for Ireland was Josh Little, who's having some tournament. He's going at just over sevens across the competition. He's taking good new ball wickets. How good is he? Is he someone you'd expect to get an IPL deal in the new year?
That's a really interesting question. I suppose it's difficult to evaluate outside of competitions like this, because a lot of the time Ireland don't play as much international cricket as they would like to. Obviously, they did have a decent fixture list the home summer just gone, but I don't think they play an awful lot in the 2023 summer as it stands. There's a couple of qualifying tournaments to play. And it can be quite difficult to judge people when they're sort of, you know, I suppose the standout bowler in an attack, but you wonder whether that, you know, that effect has some kind of impact on how teams approach them and they sort of try and play out one guy. But I think through this World Cup, he's been really, really impressive. I mean, he consistently bowls at decent pace without being expressed, but I think has this, he's got quite a sort of whippy wrist action, which I think enables him to find some seam movement when it's on offer and also find some extra bounce, which has been really effective during this competition. I think he's got a rare skill in being able to bowl in all three phases of the game. I think we've seen him be pretty destructive with the new ball in this tournament, but he's previously done well at the death, and obviously Andy Balburnie's sort of been bringing him back through the middle overs today. That felt like quite a big wicket when he got Maxwell out, and I think the 11th over was when he bowled his third, which was relatively early. And yeah, he's already had a little bit of a taste, I guess, of franchise cricket around the world. I suppose the key thing for that generation of Irish players is the fact they no longer have access to county cricket unless they're overseas players, which has been a real big shift since they got test status, and that was a direct result of it. So yeah, it means it's really important for them to try and get that exposure overseas and the development opportunities around the world. So I think by playing in stuff like the T10, Lanka Premier League, you know, it might not get a huge amount of attention back in Ireland or even, you know, outside of the country it's happening in a lot of the time. But I that seems to have really helped him. And IPL, you know, it's probably a bit of a stretch, but he was there as a net bowler last year with Chennai. There's every chance he'll do something similar this year if Ireland's schedule allows, I would think. And yeah, who knows, when you've started to get your name out there and you start to meet a few people around the franchise circuit, analysts and GMs and bowling coaches and all that sort of thing. There's a lot of overlap and crossover. So who knows, maybe he'll impress the right person at the right time and get a deal.
And you'd think he'd start to be sort of like a shoe-in for that next rung, I guess. Like I'd be very surprised if a BBL team doesn't snap him up, considering he'll have, you know, good availability, that he's young and he's sort of willing to learn and that sort of thing. And possibly maybe a lower price point as well, because as you say, he comes with those extra, like he'll have that extra motivation to go to those sorts of tournaments because he's not doing much else. He won't be losing out on stuff. And because he is so eager to improve and impress, I guess.
This is for a separate podcast, but Josh Little playing for Ireland is one of those player team combinations that just makes me want T20 cricket to have four bowlers allowed to bowl five overs rather than five bowlers being allowed to bowl four. Anyway, Ben, Ireland, as well as Australia accelerated, Ireland really lost their way with the ball towards the end of the innings. Mark Adair in particular got some tap. His third over was an 11 ball over and he'd really struggled with the shorter boundary in particular, not really sure where to bowl, bowling too wide to kind of counteract it, but couldn't really pull it off.
And that's the thing. It's just such an odd card to look at because it was kind of that third bowler, which was a weird sort of combination of Fionn Hand, Gareth Delaney and Mark Adair. I guess that's what that fourth and fifth bowler that kind of cost them because the rest were just doing so good. But yeah, Adair is a funny one because we've obviously seen him bowl really well. There's no question that he's a bad bowler. It was just a bad night at a bad time for Ireland, I think. And I don't think Ireland really had a choice because they left out the spinner in favour of Fionn Hand, who bowled obviously that brilliant ball to Stokes and was good in that game against England. But then George Dockrell bowled really well. So you're wondering then if they actually would have quite liked Simi Singh to be in that 11. But then Gareth Delaney wasn't, you know, he wasn't cheap. He was going just under 10s and he's also not going to be a death bowler. And that was the really tough thing that Adair had to then come back on and bowl that 20th over, having already had a, you know, there's no recovering at that point. There's nothing you can do to really massage your figures when you've already gone and been so expensive. So yeah, that was what cost them. But I can see why Ireland went with the team they did, and I can see why they went with the choices of when to bowl as they did as well. I think that it was kind of just that little bit of lacking in depth, lacking that kind of all round option that meant that they basically came up short, I think.
Matt, Ben's already mentioned him, but Aaron Finch scored 63 of 44. He was the player of the match. This is in some ways been the World Cup of awkward selection debates with Temba Bavuma, South Africa's captain, out of nick, Aaron Finch out of nick, and Ben Stokes, England superstar, England not really sure what to do with him. Are you convinced he's in any sort of form despite this knock? 63 or 44 has come at a decent rate, but he was the chief beneficiary of Adair's erratic third over.
Not hugely, no, but I don't necessarily think that means that there's going to be a difficult decision for Australia to make. I think it sounds like he clearly was off the field for a bit of the run chase, and it sounds from what he said in the presentation like there's he's still relatively hopeful that he'll be available to play Afghanistan. But I think that we'll probably have a bit more information on that in the next couple of days. I think if he's available, he'll play, just because I think it's the sort of it's a bit of a nuclear option at this stage after a win and after a 50 to be talking about dropping someone. I'm not at all convinced he's in much form, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if he retires from international cricket after this tournament. That said, I think his T20I numbers, despite the fact he's looked pretty ungainly for a lot of the last year, his T20I numbers are nowhere near as bad as his ODI numbers were, where he really did sort of seem to fall off. I think in T20Is, he sort of scrapped hard and had to work pretty hard for his runs. And there's not been a lot of sort of, you know, you think of what Aaron Finch used to be like probably 5 years ago at his best. And he was a seriously fun player to watch. It's not been particularly enjoyable to watch him bat a lot of the time, but when he sort of grinds through and, does make ballers pay to an extent in that over against Adair, I think it's relatively hard to argue against him being in the side for the time being, and given everything that's gone on and given where Australia are in the tournament. I think Australia sort of, they still don't look like everything's right, and they still don't look like they're clicking, but this was an important win, and important for them to get a decent total on the board as much as anything, just to give themselves a bit of confidence heading into what looks like it'll be a crunch game against Afghanistan later in the week.
And the captaincy thing is very complicated as well. I mean, obviously he's a very good, very experienced captain. I think you saw when he was off the field that Australia base just had no idea who was leading it. They were sort of like, whenever there was a chance for review, the cameras would just sort of like scan around anyone who was having any sort of conversation, like, is this the guy that's going to signal it? We're not really sure. It looks like that from the rumblings in the press and stuff, that they're quite keen to go back to David Warner at some point, find a way around that lifetime leadership ban, which you wouldn't think would be possible, but I'm sure they'll find a loophole. But I think they probably want the space to make that decision, that transition, so that it can be sort of like stage managed and done with an element of grace, rather than sort of making quite a cutthroat thing in the middle of a tournament. So say Finch were to pull up with a hamstring injury and not be able to play a part, I don't really know what they'd do captaincy wise. I think that they probably wouldn't rush through the Warner thing. Then you've got possibly Smith, who could come back in, or you've got Cummins, who's in the team but is perhaps the most in danger of dropping out. So it's a tricky one.
I think it will be Wade if Finch isn't available against Afghanistan. I think he's been the sort of nominated vice captain, not officially in this tournament, but I think over the past couple of years he's captained a couple of times in Bangladesh and West Indies when Finch has been unavailable. So my instinct is it would be him, but again, you know, he's probably someone who realistically might well be playing in his last world tournament. So long term, it's still a big question that Australia will have to answer, but I suppose World Cups are very much about the short term, and they'll be hoping to just hopefully not have too many difficult questions over the next three games, and three big wins should be enough for them to win the trophy again. So we're heading towards the pointy end pretty quickly.
While we're on the Australia innings, we've got to mention that piece of fielding by Barry McCarthy on the boundary, jumping behind the rope and flicking the ball back into play while it was off the ground. Even by modern standards, that was ridiculous. And you guys have kind of mentioned it already, but Australia were really on it with the ball. There were some loose shots from Ireland Shaw. Harry Tector's limp pull to square leg off Glenn Maxwell comes to mind. But Ben, Mitch Stark looked really good getting the swing, bowling fast. I think at one point his average speed popped up on the TV was over 90 miles per hour. When Matt was last on, we kind of talked about the England guys who are big names but don't actually play that much T20 cricket, so you're not quite sure where they're at. And Stark's in a similar boat. He's not played IPL cricket for years and doesn't really play that much T20 cricket around the world other than for Australia, really.
Yeah, and they've obviously demoted him away from the new ball, which would have been unthinkable not very long ago. You know, that this is, and it's kind of still unthinkable now. That's what you think is Stark is synonymous with swinging that white ball miles bowling.
He still kind of did that today, though.
No, today he did, yeah. Yeah, but I almost think that this was almost like a break from what his recent form has been like. There were some stats about how he swung it more today than he has done in recent times, and it did. Like, this could have been start back to his best in that first over, and that shows why, you know, I'm surprised still that they're not giving the new ball. I think that it's worth that risk because it can win you a game, as it basically did today. And it kind of showed that it can win you a game because Stark was not great from then on, basically. I think his next three overs went for 4-3. Lorcan Tucker just got a hold of him, was basically doing what he wanted by the end, was scooping in one ball, was then lofting in the next. Tucker was absolutely amazing, and we should obviously make sure that's stressed. But Stark, when that ball wasn't swinging, it was he didn't really have the answers, I guess. So yeah, it's still hard to work out, even with how good that over was, because of what happened afterwards. But then, given how good the over was, you wonder, do you just give him the new ball? Because Cummins isn't really swinging it either. I know he it was Hazlewood that got unlucky, wasn't it, with the ball that clipped the top of off stump, and the bail stayed on, and Australia did well not to review it. But yeah, you kind of I almost think that Cummins versus Hazlewood is like, you've got the two sort of contrasting things, obviously the left and right hand. You've got the one who's going to just hit the seam, top of off, be really hard to hit, and you've got the other guy, like, if the pressure's built and it's swinging, then he might strike. Whereas I kind of think that's the balance. But then it wasn't a great day overall for Stark despite the two wickets, so it's a weird one to work out where he is, I guess.
Matt, is Lorcan Tucker England's player of the tournament so far?
He's definitely done them a serious solid in terms of helping to dent Australia's net run rate. I'll be honest, I don't think it would have been too much of an issue for England, even if Ireland had been bowled out really cheaply. I think if they win both games, especially because of the fact they play last, I think that you know there's a chance they would have gone into the Sri Lanka game in the event that they beat New Zealand having a particular equation. So say they had to knock them off in, say, 18 overs or win by 10 or 15 runs. But I don't think it would have been too big a swing. But he has effectively, I think, meant, and I'm sure Ben will correct me if I'm wrong, but unless Australia sort of hammer Afghanistan by a huge margin, that two wins should probably now be enough for England to get through. And yeah, I think he played brilliantly, didn't he? I think especially when you consider how far he's come in the last year, having been running the drinks for Ireland at last year's World Cup and left out in favour of Neil Rock, who was a real rookie at the time. I think he was 21 and was keeping wicket in the last tournament, to have sort of, I don't know, he's almost, it feels like he's almost stumbled into a role at number three, a little bit like Mitch Marsh did for Australia last year, where he sort of, he'd been floating around the middle order, not really having any kind of settled role. And then I think against South Africa this summer, he got a sort of, was when he first got a chance there, and they kept him at number three for the rest of their T20 international summer after that. And yeah, he's really thrived there. And as I suppose the most impressive thing, as far as I was concerned, was the fact that he kept going really hard in the power play, despite the fact that, you know, it was absolute carnage at the other end, because it would have been very, very easy for him to sit in, go absolutely nowhere and get a fairly pointless 40 or 40. But as it stands, you know, it was a very, very brief moment, but there was a just a flicker of a second where you thought, hang on, Ireland might actually still be in this after 17 overs, which wouldn't have been possible if he'd just knocked it about and sort of tried to save face or just get a score for himself. So yeah, I thought it was a really impressive innings, and yeah, bodes well for Ireland again that he's someone part of that next generation of players who haven't had access to county cricket for their development, but has sort of managed to do well just playing through the Irish system. And I suppose he's the sort of guy, along with you know, looking through Tector and Little and Adair and Delaney and people like that, who are going to have to be the spine of the team for the next sort of 5-10 years going forward. And I think he's put down a bit of a marker with that innings today.
Ben, as we've established, you've watched a lot of Ireland, and he's had a great tournament, not just runs here today, but runs against West Indies and England as well.
Yeah. I mean, Ireland have had obviously a great tournament overall, and lots of positive signs, especially after a summer where they kind of kept getting close to, you know, pulling off landmark victories. They got, I think, that was a defeat by 4 runs against India in a really high scoring game, a couple of times with heartbreak against New Zealand. They had a 3-2 series win against Afghanistan, which was something to shout about. But they would have still sort of maybe questioned themselves over whether that next level, sort of not just the odd upset, but competing actually consistently, whether they could do that. And there's been that consistency in this tournament, I think, you know. Apart from in that first game, they've properly competed all the way through, some real bright signs going forward. And then, having said all that, you know, they need a couple more results to go their way to be guaranteed a place at the next World Cup, the 28th World Cup. I mean,
Very quickly, England New Zealand tomorrow is an absolutely massive game. If England don't win that, they're in serious trouble. Matt, very quickly before you leave us, What are your predictions for that game?
Well, firstly, I hope England get on the field and get to play a full T20 match rather than it being affected by rain. The forecast looks not great in Brisbane, but slightly better than when I checked yesterday. So fingers crossed they manage to get out there. I think I think England are probably slight favourites as far as I see it, despite for that game, despite the fact that they've not really clicked at this World Cup, and New Zealand clearly have. I think in isolation, I think England are a stronger team than New Zealand. That said, you know, I don't think it's more than a sort of 55-45 type of a game. I think it should be a really tight one. I think it might well be won and lost in the two power plays. England obviously bowled really poorly in their last one, and New Zealand have had two very contrasting ones with the bat so far. You know, Finn Allen racing out of the blocks against Australia, and then they were pretty terrible against the new ball when they played Sri Lanka. So I think that'll be the crucial bit of the game, is England bowling to New Zealand in the first six overs, whether they can restrict Allen to a low score and make some real indents into what is a relatively shallow batting lineup. But I think it'll be a really, really good game. Having I think their last encounter was the one at the T20 World Cup last year, the semi-final in Abu Dhabi, which was a real sort of slow-burning classic. And yeah, fingers crossed we get another good one at the Gabba.
Am I right in thinking the forecast is for rain early and then for it to clear up? So Afghanistan could well be looking at a third consecutive washout. Brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just on my predictions of that game, I think so much, Matt, you're right. I think so much will rest on like Chris Wokes and Ben Stokes bowling to Finn Allen in the power play. That could be absolute carnage if Allen gets that right. But equally, England get a couple of early wickets in the power play, they'll be well on top. Anyway, that's all we have time for today. Cheers, Matt. Cheers, Ben. We'll be back tomorrow for our full weekly show after that England must-win game against New Zealand.
Sports Social Podcast Network.